Let's mostly cover today the discussion of Arev, and then we'll do one more Chabura after Yontif, covering the after Purim. Sorry, not unless YU doesn't open up until after Pesach. And then we'll do one
well,
more.
the other kid, the other kid came back negative, so we'll
Okay.
see.
Then we'll do one more Chabur after Purim, wrapping up the Socha Le'enumata and Kfiyah discussion. So we saw that there is this principle of Arev that comes up in the Sugya in Bava Basra, Kefayin Gimel Amud Aleph. That's the classic case of Arev where you're explicitly guaranteeing a loan. Right? The Gemara said that Arev doesn't need a kinyan to be mishtabed, because Bahi Ana Dekameh Hemen Le'gamar Mishtabed Nafshe. There's a certain hana that the Arev gets from the fact that the Malva is relying on his promise to guarantee the loan, and with that hana, he's agreeing to be mischayev himself. And we saw the Rashbam formulation here, but the principle in the Gemara is pretty straightforward. The principle of the Gemara is a little different from the principle that we need, because the Gemara is a case of an explicit hischayevus to cover the liability of the chov, whereas in our sugya we're talking about an implicit one. We also saw the Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara in Kiddushin spoke about Tein Mana L'Ploni V'Kadesh Ani Lach. The woman says that if you give money to a third party, that'll affect the Kiddushin. Also under a similar theory of Arev, right? So the Ritva there in Kiddushin Daf Ches used the phrase Mipnei Shehotzi Mamono Mirshuso Al Piya, because the prospective husband was motzi mamon from his own reshus based on her instruction. So that makes it somehow that she's willing to be mischayev herself for the kedushin. That's what we saw in these other sugyas. And then we came to the sugya in Bava Metzia in Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara there said, if I give money, let's say, to Eitan to go buy wine for me, and Eitan breaches, he doesn't buy the wine. So the halacha is that Eitan has to reimburse me for whatever losses I suffer by his not purchasing the wine on my behalf. And the Rishonim there really struggled with what's the basis of the liability. The Ritva quoted the Ri as holding that the Gemara only makes sense. Well, the Ritva quoted the reason, this problem in the sugya. Generally, we say that Mevatel Kiso Shel Chaver was Pater, She'en Hezeko El Grama. So if the damage of Eitan not actually purchasing the wine is only a kind of grama, why should it ever give rise to liability in Eitan to reimburse me? It should be grama ben azik and pater, because only minyasa rebach, it's mevatel kiso shel chaveiro. So does anybody remember what the re answered? Does anybody remember offhand?
Yeah, there you said there must have been an explicit clause.
Yeah, very good, Gabe. So the Ri said that it must have been an explicit hischayvus, which and he says the reason why the Gemara didn't say that is because it's so obvious. That's the only basis for liability in the sugya. The Ritva quotes Mori Harav, who disagrees, and notice that phrase. He said, "Afal pi shelo kibel all of tashlumin klal." Even if there was no explicit hischayvus, there's going to be liability based off this idea of Arev. And how did the Ritva explain this idea of Arev? Gabe, you want to explain for us? Gabe, you gotta.
Yeah, the ritual said that there's wait, hang on, I'm getting kicked out of my office. I'll be back in a second.
Okay. So the ritual explained that it's because because there was some induced reliance, right? You gave money, I gave money to Eitan. Because I, you know, Eitan induced me to rely on him by saying that he would buy the product for me, and I did rely on him, and I gave him the money with that intent. So that's what generates the liability in Eitan to reimburse me. And he quotes that this is the idea of Midin Arev. So I think the best way to explain the position of the Ritva is along the lines that in certain interactions, there's considered to be a voluntary hischaivos to indemnify the other party from losses. And that's distinct from this idea of nezek. Nezek is automatic. Even without the voluntary hischaivos, you'd be liable for nezek. If I crash into your car on the highway, I'd be liable to compensate you just in virtue of the fact that I caused you a loss. That's distinct from the idea of arev, where what gives rise to the liability is the fact that given the nature of the interaction, there's some assumption that I agreed to cover your costs. Okay. Now that's also distinct from the idea of the contractual kinyan theory, where there the liability arises out of my duty to continue the performance. In the case of arev, there's no obligation to continue the performance. It's simply implied sub-agreement, a sub-hischaivos, that if I don't perform, then I'm going to make sure to cover your losses. Now, one thing that I'm still unsure about, and you guys should feel free to weigh in on this question, is to what extent is this hischaivos considered to be implicit, that we're reconstructing the party's das, that one party really had the intent to be mischaiv for this amount? Or are we saying that this is a kind of legal construction where even though there's no presumption about the mental state of the party to be mischayiv, nevertheless, the halacha holds the party chayiv given the nature of the reliance? So to what extent should we view this hischayivos as really midas or as something that we're reading into their intent? So I want to draw your attention to the formulation in the Ritva here, where he says, "Amori harav tirates afal pi shelo kibo alav tashlum in klal," even though there never was any acceptance to pay. So, in context, you could say he's just contrasting that statement with the statement of the Ri, who said that there was an explicit hischaivos, and the Ritva is quoting Mori harav, who says it's implicit. But if you take the words out of context, it could be interpreted just on the face of it to say that there was no implicit hischaivos either. It's just automatic given the nature of this induced samach al havtachasa v'hotzi mamon al piv. Right, or as he says in the last statement, kivan shesamchu zel zeh nischaivu zel zeh, that the reliance itself is sufficient to generate that liability. Now let me just make one last point from the Ritva, then I'll take some comments. If you have any, the Ritva explicitly says that this is the inyan of Schiras Koalim. Shechayovin l'shalim l'balabayis ma shehifsid kishechazru. That the basis in Schiras Koalim for liability in Davar HaAved when they back out is this idea of Chiyav Mitam Arev. Now, I think as we pointed out last time, that really suggests that there's no implicit hischaivos. It seems to be the nature of the interaction because there's no separate reason to assume that he was mischayiv himself given that he was offered a job to work for the Balabayas. So in the last formulation, it sounds like it's the smichas per se, kiven shesamchu zel zeh nischayivu zel zeh, that grounds the chiyav mitam arev. Okay, any of you have comments just on that summary of what we've seen?
Yeah, the Ritva. If you scroll back up to it.
Yep.
Okay, that second to last paragraph, there's some tension between the two underlying parts, right? So Mori HaRab, here's the Hacha Afa Pi, Shalu Kiba Allah Tashlumin Kual.
Yeah.
And it's, right, he didn't accept upon himself the Tashlumin, but the Samachal of Natal Matav Al Da'at.
Al Da'at, yeah.
That there was some type of acceptance of something, yet he was not Mikabal Tashlumin. So there's like some tension between, I think, the two formulations going on between those two phrases.
Well, I think they're referring to two different kinds of money. So the first phrase is saying that the shliach, Eitan in this case, never accepted his chayvus upon himself.
Sorry?
The first phrase is saying that the shliach didn't accept any his chayvus on himself. Right? Eitan never accepted to pay me if he messes up. And then the last phrase is saying that because I relied on Eitan and I gave him money to go buy wine, that's why he's chayav to pay me. So I think just the word tashlumin and most here are referring to different things. In the first paragraph, in the first sentence, is referring to Eitan not having been his mischayev himself.
Right.
And the second phrase, it means the fact that Eitan, that I relied on Eitan and I gave Eitan money to buy wine for me with that intention. With that intent.
I'm not concerned by the word most. I'm concerned with the word aldas.
With the intention that he should go. Yeah. Oh.
Right. But the fact that we're concerned about there's an intention there. So since you have intention, that's I'm for some reason b'chayev in tashlumin.
So I think the intention here was to rely on him. That I was relying on his assurance that he would go and buy the wine for me, not the intention that he would reimburse me if he didn't. Mm-hmm. I think that's how to read that line. Anybody else have comments on the summary so far?
Everyone's yeah, good? I just had a quick question. So could you say that, like Nazikim, we spoke a lot about last year, how like it's very much like a tashlumin based issue. Like the fact that this chepetz was destroyed is one topic, but like. Because I caused you a hefzed mamon, I have to repay you for that damage that I caused. Here it's a little different. Here it seems to be more like the chepetz oriented as opposed to like the actual monetary value. Is that fair or is that too much of a...
What do you mean chepetz oriented?
Meaning like the fact that in our, like our example that we're talking about, like the fact that I had a task of getting you wine after you give me the money.
Yeah.
Because I failed to do that. That's the problem, and not necessarily because of the hefset moment.
Issue. Yeah, that's a good. It's the reliance really that generates the chiv, not the loss, right?
Yeah,
that's a really good point, Eitan. And you'll see that when we get to the Nesivis a little bit down in the Makoro sheet, he's going to argue that the measure of damages for Arev should be distinct from the measure of damages for Nezikin. In Nezek, you're capped at your actual losses, right? Remember that the reason why the Ritva comes onto this problem is because. The halacha says that minyas revach mivatel. What's the phrase in the Gemara? Mivatel kiso shel chaver was pater. So mitam nezek, there's no basis for liability, but based on this other idea of arev, you could generate liability. So the nesivis is going to argue that actually the measure of damages might be different. So for nezek, you'd only recover the actual losses. For arev, you might actually recover the lost profits that you would have made. So for example, if I relied on you to buy this wine in Zulshafat or whatever, and then I was going to resell the wine for double the market value or something at a profit, then it sounds like your liability should be matched to my loss, right? The lost profits, because I was relying on you in order to get that amount. That's going to be the Nesivis' argument. Whereas for Nezikin, you wouldn't be able to generate that that compensation for minyas revach, for lost profits. That's a good point. Okay. Let's get the other ritvan b'mitzia. This is on Ayin Heimabez. This is already in the beginning of our parak of Asochar Se'omnim. So the ritva here explicitly says that the reason for the tashlumin in the cases of Davar Aved is based on the idea of Arev and Kol Shevtiach Lechaber V'Sama Chaber Olav, etc. And then he says something very interesting. He says, well, if this is the case, why is the liability, if it's Mitam Arev, why is the liability capped at Ad Kedei Scharan, right, which we saw in the Mishnah, or Ad Kedei, the value of the Chavila, that's Basel Yado. So what does he say? Here's the important phrase. What's his answer?
We were sort of assuming they're das, but like what was assumed, the assumption would have been that if you couldn't find you could find someone else for double price.
Yeah, very good. He starts reconstructing the specific das of the, you know, the worker who was mischayev himself, right? He says implicitly, this is the amount that he had in mind. Hainu dasiku adataihu. You know, it's just implicit that the worker was mischayev himself up to the value of his schar, or if he deposited kalim at the employer's house, that he was mischayev himself up to the value of the kalim that he deposited. Now, I just want to put that language to me sounds very subjective. It sounds very much like voluntary hischayvus, right? It's really detached from the pure reliance measure of damages. Right, so it's not. Oh, how much was I relying on you for? It's really what up to what amount did you implicitly intend to indemnify me up to. So I think this formulation here in the Ritva on Ayin Hey, unlike the Ritva on Ayin Gimel, leans more into this voluntary hischaivus, reconstructing the mental state of the party who's mischaiv, more so than the Ritva in the end of Ezu Neshach. You guys agree with that?
I think it's a common thing that the Isin Nesugya, that it's difficult to understand where to put the cap once you're going over the value of the contract. Like by Dabar Abed, we say until 40 or 50 zuz.
Right.
But that have no, like, what's the metric by which you get that number? Right. So here, like, what's the metric?
Go on.
I mean, like, so here, like, at least here, like, he forces a metric, but it's unclear where the metric is truly coming from.
Right, I agree. I think this is going to be helpful in trying to figure out why the Gemara draws the line at, you know, Arbam Chamishim Zuz, or Ad Dimea Chavila, or Kefal Scharan. But I just want to point out that in giving a reason for the Gemara Shirim there, based on Mistama Hainu Da'asiku Adatayu, the Ritva seems to be committing himself to an interpretation of Arev that actually is not just the value of the smichos, the value of the reliance. It leans more into, oh, how much was he intending to be mischayef himself for? Right, Adam?
Can we suggest to reconcile the two parts of the ritual? Can you hear me well?
Yeah.
Is it coming out clear?
Beautifully.
Okay, great. It's my phone. So can we suggest that to reconcile the two parts of the ritual, that the ritual believes that the essential hastacha, the fact that you're chayv anything, that basic reliance, that's like a Torah law that's more of a systematic feature of just like the nature of the relationship. But when it comes to the amount of how much we gauge the reliance is due, that's going to be based on the implicit das of like
They
agreed to.
That's a nice shot. Yeah, it's a nice way of trying to reconcile the two ideas. That you're saying that maybe the core hischaivus is automatic, right? It's the haftacha. But maybe sometimes when the shear is higher or lower, that's just going to be, it could be like overridden by or modified by the mistama haina dasiko datayu, right?
Yeah, and then like the das itself is not relevant to create, it's not relevant or necessary in order to create the obligation for it to pay. But it will be relevant in terms of the actual monetary sum.
Yeah, that's nice. I like that.
Where does the obligation to pay come from? Like the obligation to pay more than your contract?
The obligation would come from what the idea that he relied on you. Right, so the etzem is the etzem hasmichos or something, the samach alav, you know, hotzi mamon al piv. That's what generates the duty to compensate. Yoni's saying that maybe that could be modified by or defined or specified in some way by the intentional state of how much was masik adaite. That's the distinction.
Seems very similar in a sense.
Similar to what?
Saying that what's mechayev you to pay from the outset is the fact that he was relying on you, and how do we? I mean, it's all a mental game.
So well, like he was relying the on amount, right? Money. The amount. I think the amount would be.
Both of it's a bit of a mental game. But it was al das with this implied understanding, although the implied understanding isn't truly there.
Well, I think Yoni's trying to suggest that maybe you don't need a real implied understanding to generate the chiyuv mitam arev. You only need that to define the amount of the hischaivus. I think that's what Yoni's getting at, right, Yoni?
Yeah, exactly. I think look at like the Ritva and Ayin Gimel, it doesn't sound like there's any das relevant.
Right. I'll say the one reason to push back on that is because I'm a little uncomfortable with the idea. Well, what is the do right? What you're calling the do right? A kernel of hischaivus mitam arev, you know, without the specific shear, right? So what does that look like? How much is it for? And what does it mean to have in principle, his chayvos without with an indeterminate amount, right? So
I mean, why can't you say that the down he's high with is based on how much he's relying on you?
Right.
Like he's relying on you to sell these bottles of wine, so you have that too. He's relying on you to to farm or whatever it is, it's flax. So you have that field, and then the doc could then modulate how much exactly that field
is. I like that formulation. I think that could work very nicely. And that's a nice way of reconciling the tension and the resolving the tension between the two different formulations. I want to make another point here. Notice in the last paragraph in the Ritva on Ayin Hei Mabez, the Vidas Mori Harav paragraph. So this is still the Ritva's commentary on the Mishnah. And he says that this whole discussion of Chiyav Mitam Arev is only b'misha sachar polim ba'amira below kinyan. Remember the Ritva Lashitaso held earlier in the year that the Zchus Po'al Achzar only applies when there's no kinyan. Right? And he quoted his Muri Araba saying, when there is a kinyan, there's no Zchus Lachzar. That was the whole Dian with the Ritva against the Shach. So here the Ritva says that it's only B'misha Sachar Po'alim Ba'amira below kinyan. She'im Neschaivu Po'alim B'kinyan Harei HaMlocha Mutelas Aleihen. So, if you read the Ritva carefully here, you'll notice that he's drawing a distinction between cases of Chiyuv Mitam Arev in Davar HaAvod and cases of Chiyuv Mitam Kinyan, Mitam the contract, in Davar HaAvod. So, when he talks about in the beginning of the piece, when he talks about the Chiyuv Mitam Arev, he tells us that's if there's no kinyan between the parties. So if I hire Eitan, if I ask Eitan to come work for me and he hasn't yet done there's no kinyan between us, then the implied reliance will generate liability under a theory of Arev. But Eitan can only become liable under what condition? Gabe, let's get Yakir. Where's Yakir? Is Yakir still in here?
I'm here.
Yeah, Yakir. Under what condition could Eitan become liable?
Already violated.
Yeah, which is?
Yes,
if he's negligent, right? And he thinks that there's no basis for liability mitam arev under onus. But what if it's mitam kinyan? Let's say Eitan and I had a kinyan. Then what would there be a different basis for liability? Or would he be liable under different conditions?
And certainly under different conditions, he says Zafilo Ba'onas.
Yeah, right. So exactly. You could see, so I think this, so Akir, what do you think? I mean, I think that the Ritva here is drawing a clear distinction between liability that arises under a theory of Arev, that's separate from the contract theory, because when there's no kinyan, and it only exists if there's Pshia. If there's a kinyan, then the Malachas Mutelas Alav, because he's bound by an obligation, a contractual duty to perform, in which case he could be liable even if it's bonus. It's like we saw, like once I sell the house to you and something happens to the house, that's your achrayas, right? It's in your rishus. Same here. Once I do a kinyan and I have a normative obligation to see the contract through to its completion, I would be held liable, I feel a bonus, right? Yakir, you have thoughts on this, or?
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think this is a very nice way of distinguishing the two different grounds of liability, the contractual theory, which would hold that there's liability even under conditions of ones. Whereas under a theory of Arev, it applies pre-Kinyan, but only if there's Pshia, if there's negligence. Yeah, so I think that's a very nice way of distinguishing between the two different grounds of liability here. Good. Any thoughts on that little piece?
In terms of adding, and then let's say you start automatically for the ritual, you make Tom Arev, and then afterwards you make a Kinyan.
Yeah.
So now you have a contract.
Yeah.
Does the contractual relationship replace the tie with Mithin Arev, or is it supplemental to it? And then do you have both Chiyuvim now, or you only have...
I think you wouldn't be allowed to like double collect. Like you couldn't collect separately on each ground, because that would be like unfair to the nitva. But I would mean that you have like alternative grounds for collecting. You know, so you could either go after him mitam arev, Because it seems to me like the liability mitam arev is going to be wholly contained within the liability of mitam kinyan. Right, so one kind of replaces the other, but there still be like separate grounds for collecting. But like, for example, you might think like if the nesivus is right, it's an interesting question whether kinyan could get you to minyas or revach. Right, it's not clear. That you might say that the implied is chayvus of arev can, in which case you might want to go after aspects of the claim mitam arev and other aspects mitam kinyan. Does that answer, Yoni?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Let me just make one other diak in the Ritva, because you see the Ritva is really the Mara Deshmaita on this whole question here. So I sent this out in the email after last Chabura in response to Dani. When was our last Chabura? Thursday?
Yeah.
But you know, I think it's like Ashkafadik that we didn't end up having Chabura on Tuesday. Right? It was before the whole coronavirus scare. But I think some guys were at APAC, getting themselves infected at APAC. And we canceled Chabur on Tuesday, no?
Yeah.
So it might have worked to our advantage. We had like an extra day of precaution not to be on that second floor or first hall next to room 211. So that
was? What?
Well,
Is that where the guy was? 211?
211.
Wow.
So we were 210, no?
Yeah.
Yeah, look at Donnie. He's going to bench Gomel today. All right, so the Ritva in Bar Mitzia 9 Chesamad Aleph has just an interesting comment. Here he's discussing the phrase Ad kedei sochar le'en, ad kedei scharan. So we'll see later on that there are 2 days in the Rishonim. What does that mean, ad kedei scharan? The Ritva thinks it means up to double the value that the poel was hired for. We'll discuss that later. But when he talks about this liability, he says, when the poel is chayev to pay, he says, v'hayim mamon gamor hu v'lo knas. As an afkamina, usually a knas is not mishtali min ayorshim, inogovim min ayorshim, but something that's mamon gamor is paid from the yarshim. So if you put these two ritvas together, and you assume that he's talking here mitam arev also, then it sounds like you would get the idea that arev is mamon gamor, it's not a knas. Whereas if the liability was mitam garmi or something like that, it might only be a kind of a knas. So I think the point here is that if these two ritvas go together, then he's saying that the liability is liability of arev constitutes mamon gamor. And I think that makes a lot of sense if the ground is his chayvas midas. Because once I generate a chiv or a matana or a kinyan towards you, it has a real din mamon. It shouldn't be anything less than that. So I think that's like a nice way of rounding out the ritva's position. You guys agree with that? Diak? Yeah? Everyone could like raise their hand or something, you know? If you agree, already agree? Say yeah? Okay. Donnie's giving me a thumbs up. Adam, you agree? I see 18.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the raise hand thing isn't here anymore.
It disappeared?
Disappeared once we moved to the share
screen. Yeah.
Yeah, once we moved to the share screen.
Okay, so that's good. That's what I wanted to get at for the Ritva's position. What I want to do now is I want to continue to flesh out this idea of Chiyuv Mitam Arev, both by seeing how Rishonim apply it and how they develop it by extending its application in conceptually, not just in places where they apply it, but in the kinds of liability that it generates. Can everybody hear me? Yeah? Okay, good. So if you look here at the Rashba in Chelek Aleph Simin Elef Tes Zayin, so the Rashba has an interesting tshuva. He has the following case. So Reuven and Shimon are Shutfin, and they borrow money from Levi. And then Levi comes to collect his debt, but he forgets to bring the loan document, right? And if you've like learned any of the sugyas of Malbev Lova, you know that if you forget to, the whole concern is that if the guy, you don't want to pay a debt and leave the shtar be out of Malva, because then he could always come back and collect a second time. So Reuven and Shimon initially didn't want to pay him back ad sheyachzir lahem shtar chovo, until he brings back the shtar. But ultimately, it seems like Reuven persuaded Shimon to pay back anyway, right? How did Reuven persuade Shimon to do that? Does anybody know? I know offhand. He said, Reuven told Shimon, "Parehu mimos hashituf, pay back Levi from the assets of the partnership. Va'ani etein lecha hashtar lizman ploni, and I'll ensure that we get back the shtar at a certain amount of like within a certain amount of time, so we don't have to be concerned that he'll collect a second time." Right?
Wait, what's the mechanics?
What?
Wait, what was that mechanic?
The mechanics is that he said that he's going to. Levi wanted to collect the debt. Shimon didn't want to. Reuven and Shimon initially didn't want to pay because he didn't have the shtar with him, and they were worried that he would collect and then chozer and gove a second time. But then finally, Shimon tells Reuven, he's like, you know what? Let's just pay him now, and I'll make sure to get the shtar within a few days. So like, trust me, right? He says, "Parei mimos hashita, fani etem lecha shtar lezman ploni." Sounds like when Shimon was actually making payment to Levi, Reuven said, "Yes, I'm going to make sure that we get the shtar back. Like you could rely on me, kind of thing, right?" So what happened? Ubein tayim meis Levi, ubo yorsa v'tava v'tavu shtar chov v'hutzachu leforum shelo haya lehem rias piron. Right. So what happened is that Levi dies. And then his Yorshim come and they find the shtar chov and they collect it a second time. So now Shimon sues Reuven, and he says that Reuven basically promised that he would recover the shtar. So Reuven is chayiv to me mitam arev. He basically told me, don't worry, we don't have to worry about a second collection because I'm going to make sure that we get the shtar back. And insofar as Reuven failed to recover the shtar, Reuven is liable to make back the losses to Shimon. Okay, and what does Shimon say? Sorry, what does Reuven say? Bahalato ain she'ain kanarvos ela eitza hisio. He's saying, I never agreed to guarantee the chov. I simply gave him advice and said, I'll do my best to get it back, but it's nothing. It's not like I agreed to become an arev. Does everybody see the back and forth in the Rashba here?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really it's a nice way of both trying to figure out it's a nice way of figuring out in which cases Arev would apply. Because on the one hand, there was no explicit acceptance to be an Arev. On the other hand, Reuven induced Shimon to act under his insurance that he'll recover the shtar. And you can see the debate between the two Bali Din is whether this rises to the level of Arev, or rather it just remains a kind of Eitz ICO. Okay.
Isn't there also, the internal contradiction? I'm going to get to that.
An internal contradiction in the Rashba?
Yeah, well, in the case.
Okay, what would that be?
You know, if the Yerushalayim collect again, that would imply that the star was not used to already collect, in which case, Reuven should just say, well, to collect again, and clearly the shtar was never paid, so why should I owe you any money? On the flip side, if it wasn't used to collect, then there's no payment that's happening anyways, so then how could Shimon have any claim against Reuven?
Well, I think it's with respect to different parties, so there's no...
Right.
Right, so with respect...
If you're playing this from a base, then...
Like different parties have different merits in their claims, so Levi's Yorshim definitely have a right to collect because they have a shtar chov. Reuven and Shimon are both claiming it was paid, but they have negius with respect to the chob, so that doesn't undercut the Yorshim of Levi's claim, right? It's just a dispute between the two of them now. And as between the two of them, the question is there chiyuv mitam arev, or is it only a kind of eitzah, in which case there's no liability?
Well, it's almost like if two people came from you, and one went down one path, one went down a different path, and the other's tumble on one path, and you.
Right, but I don't think it's that extreme. I don't think there's a conceptual contradiction here, because it's just about the Reuven and Shimon have no nemanus klape the yorshim of Levi. It's just a dispute between the two of them as to whether. From the Bezin's perspective, the loan was not. There's no evidence that the loan was paid. All you have is Reuven and Shimon's claim that it was paid, but they're the debtors, right? So they don't have nemanus klape the piron echov. Now the Rashba is focusing in on the dispute between the two of them, which turns on whether we could apply chiyuv mitam arev to this case. And the Rashba ends up saying shadinim Shimon, that Shimon could sue Reuven to recover the payment of the debt. Why? Because Reuven had promised to recover the shtar, and Shimon only acted in paying on Reuven's insurance. He relied on Reuven. Shekol she'osem maisal pi acher, oso acher chayv midin arev. It's really a surprising answer of the Rashba, but he wants to extend chiyuv mitam arev to this case. So what do you guys think of this application? Call on someone here. Donnie, what do you think of the application? Donnie
here?
Yeah, Donnie's over there.
I was on mute.
Yeah.
This this more of like an implicit type of formulation of arev.
So I don't know if this takes a stand on implicit. It's definitely not explicit.
Yeah.
He just said vani etein lecha shtar, right? Mm-hmm. So he's saying that's sufficient to say that Shimon really relied on Reuven. Okay. But what do you think of just the way he formulates the principle in his conclusion? Kol she'osa maisa pi acher oso acher chayv midin arev. It's a little broad, no?
Yeah, it does seem broad. I'm not...
We have a hand raised from the Zolt. Let's see what the Zolt has to say.
But how do you raise his hand?
I don't know. He did that.
On the bottom, there's like a place there, participants. So you press participants, then you can raise your hand.
I'm going to lower the hand now, but yeah, go
ahead. Hey! Oh, wow. Yeah,
exactly.
Go for it, Yoni.
Question in terms of the Rashba, the chiyuv is based on what? The fact that you pay back the loan? It's only used the shtar specifically. You're not mechayev yourself for the shtar, you're mechayev yourself because you paid back.
Meaning, the fact that Shimon paid back under Reuven's assurance that he would recover the loan document from Levi. So he only paid back.
It's not that Reuven was mechayev himself to return the loan document. Reuven was mechayev himself to cover Shimon's potential losses.
Right.
Okay, so well, I think what's interesting about that is that in this context, Shimon has a chiyuv either way to pay back Levi because he lent borrowed money.
Right, but he has no chiyuv to pay back until he gets his shtar. Right? So, like, if it's a milva b'shtar, like, a lova doesn't have a chiv to pay unless he's able to recover the shtar chov. And Reuven kind of...
But he still paid back and he didn't piron. So I think it's a real big finish in some way to say that even though you're paying back and you didn't piron, a ravus would still apply in that context. I think because the sum din of a ravus applies to if you do something which is totally gratuitous and you're mostly mamon, then I'm kind of making already. But here, you're doing things which are not entirely good to it. If you're paying back, you know, you didn't.
Yeah, it's interesting. But I do think it's the answer to that is more that he has chiv to pay generally, but he also has a right to get his shtar back. And Reuven can persuaded him to pay back without recovering the shtar, and that's what makes Reuven liable. Right. Yeah. I think the phrase of Kol She'osa Maisa Pi Acher Osa Acher Chayim Din Arev is a little too broad. I think on that.
Well, it sounds like it applies to everything.
Yes, right. It applies almost to everything. If I tell Donnie, I say, hey Donnie, why don't you invest your money in Google? It's a great stock. It's only going to go up from now until the day you hit 65. And Donnie does that. I say you might say that's Osa Maisa Pi Acher Osa Acher Chayim Din Arev. Right, so I think the Rashba's got to have some qualification. Maybe he could pack it into what it means to be Osem Aisal Piacher. But I think the formulation of the principle is very broad. And look, even the application to this case is very generous. Two partners, they say they have a dispute about where to invest the money, and one guy says, "Let's do it here." Does that mean the other partner was Osem Aisal Piv? Like, how do you really draw the line between Osem Aisal Piv and Eitza Hisiyasa, right? And you see the Rashba seems to be very generous in calling this a case of Osem Aisal Piacher such that it triggers Dinam of Arev. But yeah, I think it's a very important application of a very important extension of the principle of Mitam Arev. And you see, by the way, that the Rashba paskins this principle. Right? Let me make a broader point here. I know Noah's not here. Noah's our Daf Yomi guy. Anybody else doing Daf Yomi? Adam?
Yeah, I'm a little behind in some parts of it, but...
right. Yeah, Kiri, you do Daf Yomi or no?
No.
No, leave it. Only Ami does Daf Yomi. Right, so...
How'd you get 60% credit?
Yeah, this is a really interesting principle because, look, if you're really just learning the Gemara Kipshuta, you would never come across this idea of Chiyav Mitam Arev. The Sugya and Kiddushin and the Sugya and Bav Basra are much weaker principles, right? They seem to be... Certainly the Sugya and Bav Basra is only an explicit case of Arev, where the person says, I'm willing to guarantee the Chov, and if he can pay, I'll be the one to make the debt back to you. The Gemara and Kiddushin is a little closer to our principle, but the Rishonim then run with it and say, oh, there's all this implied indemnification in all these cases. So until now, we saw it in the Ritva, but you see the Rashba here in... And this Tshuva and Aleph Elef Tazayin is working with it as well. Okay.
It is possible you could limit the Rashba here.
You could what?
You could limit, perhaps, the Rashba in this case because this is specifically by a case of Shutvin. Right?
But I would think if anything, in the case of Shutvin, that would weaken the application of Arev. I mean, it would make it less plausible because, a Shutvin always gives advice to his partner.
Right.
They work. They make.
Because in this case, he does get explicit benefit. Because now he can pay it now rather than having to wait a week to pay it later. It's advantageous for him to pay it now.
Not if he's going to end up having to pay twice, which is what happened, though. Right. So I think
but in his eyes, right, he's saying, like, I want to pay now. Like, that's why he's convincing the guy to pay now as well.
I don't know. I don't see that as being so. I don't see that as. Limiting the application of Arev to this case.
We could say, like, in general, Arev is optimally that it could be the benefit to be fired from one person to the other.
Right. No, I'm not sure. Yoni raise his hand. Yoni?
Do you think that this might track for the Rashba with, like, Lishnei Iver? Just, like, the language of Eitza and whether or not Eitza or not sounds like it might be similar to, like, whether you hire for Lishnei Iver and differentiating between, like, Shteyavre Denara or Chadavre Denara.
I don't think so. I think this is kind of what Donnie was asking last time. Is this really like a Chiyav Mamon or, something else?
No, I mean, it could be a Chiyav Mamon, but I'm saying the parameters for when it's defined as Eitza versus when you're Mechayev yourself made in Arev may be akin to
it's interesting.
How we define
Chiyav Mamon either. It could be. I don't see any of that in the language of the Rashba. Yes, you're saying Eitza Hisio. I guess, like, you also have Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bezeh, right? Or Zeh LaZeh as a principle and not being Machshil somebody. I guess it'd be interesting to see if any of these concepts are related to each other. But I don't see anything in the Rashba that suggests that they're related. Unless you know something, Yoni, about the language of Eitza Hisio being associated specifically with, like, Nisayeya or Lifnei Iver. But it doesn't ring.
No, I just know the general discussion about whether something is Eitza. Or whether it's more than just Eitza tends to, like, be a discussion with neighbors.
So yeah, that's interesting. Let's look at this next case. So we have a bottom of page 4. We have a Mishnah in Bava Metzia Tzadi Chesem Beis. the Mishnah basically tells us the following. So suppose now that Donnie is lending me his cow. And so, Donnie, are you in Bergenfield?
Why is it always me in these cases?
Fine, I'll use somebody else. Let's see.
I'm getting into a lot of problems here. I don't know.
Yeah, I hear. Let's say, let's keep you out of it for now. So,
Yakir... I'm in Teaneck right now.
Okay. So, Yakir lends me his cow. And I say, Yakir, send it to me with your servant. Right, we know that Yakir lives like a nice bourgeois lifestyle. And I say, Yakir, send it to me with your driver. Okay? So the question is, if the driver is driving the cow down from Connecticut to Philly to deliver it to me, and then a lightning bolt hits the car and kills the cow, whose liability is it? I'm the shoel, right? Shoel is chai bonesin. The cow had not yet reached my rishus. Yakir sent it at my instruction. He sent it with his driver. So is it considered to be my liability or is it Yakir's liability? So what would you think offhand? Whose liability should it be in that case? Let's ask Gabe in Cleveland. You know, I think I could unmute Gabe. I think I could unmute people. Is that possible?
I can unmute myself. I would assume that it's the recipient's liability because he instructed it to send them the agenda.
Okay, because you're looking at this from the lens of our sugya, right?
Yes, so.
But if you weren't learning, if you weren't in a chabura on Chiyuv Mitam Arev, right, what might you have thought in that context?
I wouldn't have necessarily said Mitam Arev. Isn't there a Gemara in Gittin about sending it, or I've definitely seen this more recently, about sending a get via Shaliach, and so it depends on whether the instruction was to send it. When the Mekabel had intent to receive the get, so shouldn't this be a similar question here?
Okay.
When is there a transfer of ownership?
When's the transfer of ownership? That's a good way of putting it. So if Yakir is driving it, if it's being driven down by Yakir's driver, whose rishus would you think it's in?
Right, Ben. So I guess on a simple level, you'd say it's if his Yadav Kiad Rabo, it's still in Yakir's rishus.
Yeah, I would assume if it's in Yakir's Cadillac, right, and it's being driven by Yakir's driver, the driver's wearing Yakir's white gloves, you'd assume that it's in Yakir's rishus, right?
Would it be mechalik between a shaliach and an eved?
Okay, so maybe. And we'll see that the Mishnah actually says, the Mishnah B'Mitzia says that in such a case, if I tell Yakir to send it down with his butler and something happens to it along the way, it's my achrayas. It's the achrayas of the shoel. Even though it had not yet come into my rishus. That's what the Mishnah and Sadi Chesem Beis establishes. So the Rishonim are really puzzled by this. And this is the Ran's question. The Ran says, initially, he says, well, what mechanism would explain why I am liable? Right, if it's being driven by Yakir's chauffeur and in Yakir's rishus. So Gabe, what mechanism, before you get to Arev, do you think would explain why I might be liable? Or we could ask Yakir, you have thoughts on this? Here's his question, right? V'yam tomar v'amen eschayuv. Why in the world should I be liable for the lightning bolt hitting Yakir's car driven by Yakir's driver when the thing has not yet come into my rishus? So Yakir, what would you say would be the basis for holding me liable for the loss?
You might just suggest that it's just that once the period of the She'ela starts as soon as the She'ela's instructions are being followed.
It's an interesting suggestion. That's not the Ron. The Ron initially tries to suggest by saying that maybe there's like some aspect of shlichus here, that maybe when I point Yakir's, when I tell Yakir to send it with his chauffeur, maybe that's my way of appointing his chauffeur as my shliach, and once it comes into the rishus to my shliach, it's as if it came into my rishus, right? Which is, I guess, some combination of what Yakir is saying with the principles of shlichus. The Ran rejects that because he says you can't have a minoy shlichus like that shlo bifnei edim. In order for Yakir's chauffeur to have become my shliach, such that the cow is now considered to my rishus, I would have had to have appointed him bifnei shnei edim. He says that didn't happen in the sugya, so it can't be that the underlying theory here has to do with shlichus. So what the Ran then suggests, which is really striking, he says v'yishlomar tohacha lav midin shlichus hu ela midin arev. This is what Gabe said initially. The reason why I become liable is not because Yakir's chauffeur is my agent and because the She'ela started now, but rather it's mitam arev. Shekivan she'amar le lohotzi paraso mershuso v'sholcha bi'aravdo nischayev midin arev kechol motzi mamon mershuso shel chavero nischayev lo chavero kedin arev. I basically told Yakir to be motzi mamon at my direction. Yakir acted under my instruction, and therefore, I implicitly am deemed to have indemnified him from any loss resulting from his following my instructions. Okay? That's a really interesting position, no?
I like it.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's a really nice application of our sugya. Now, just to flesh out exactly, when do you think the object comes into my rishus on this theory? When does the She'ela begin?
Still only when you get it, I would say.
Exactly. Very good, Adam. That's exactly right. The Ran says that the She'ela only begins once it enters my Rishus, once Yakir's chauffeur drops it off in Philly and brings it into my house, etc. The liability for the root is a different liability than the liability of Shoel. It really just has to do with this idea that I was mischai of myself by instructing him to send it with me, right? By instructing him to send it with his chauffeur. I think that's really important. I do think it's interesting here. Remember the Ritva earlier was machalik and seemed to say that Arev might only work to be mechayiv for Pshia, not for Ones. It's an interesting question whether the Ran is disagreeing with that over here. The Ran here is also bothered by a further question. So does anybody know what the principle of She'ela Bebailim is? Or Shmir Bebailim? Ooh, Yakir, hand raised. Go, Yakir. You have to unmute.
I had a question on what you just said, but we can finish the Ran first if you want.
No, go for it, Yakir.
The question, or?
Go for your question.
Why wouldn't this Arif principle for the Ran apply throughout the period of the She'ela? Meaning, why wouldn't this be a basis for liability for every case of Shmira?
Yeah, I guess it might be. It's just superseded by the rules of Shmira that go into effect separately.
Okay. It's like on this view, it seems like, let's say he were Shomer Safar. Seems like he would be chayav the onsin during the period of the transfer, while the driver has it, and then once he takes it, it would be superseded by rules of shmira, which would be pater onsin or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Which is kind of funny, right?
Yeah, it seems like a very weird state of affairs.
I guess you're saying if he was a shomer sachar, is that the?
Yeah.
Well, I guess one thing you might say, right, you're saying it's funny that it would work that way. I wonder if he would think that maybe this only works for a She'ela the Chiv Arev for She'ela takes on the principles of She'ela, and the Chiv Arev, if you're a Shomer Sachar, would have the liability of a Shomer Sachar kind of thing. So like if you're trying to figure out what they implied his Chayvus is, So you might say the implied hischaivos, if I'm working as a shomer sachar, is that those principles of liability should apply to the travel down. And the mission is just dealing with the case of shoel, and that's why it's applying the liability rules of shoel early. That's one answer I would give to that question. But yeah, I hear it's an interesting point.
That could be like important for the chiyuv for Ariv in general, that Ariv tends to, that this chiyuv of Ariv tends to mimic whatever type of chiyuv it's being attached to.
Yeah, that's a good point. That works out nicely with the Ritva in our parak, where he says, you know, this is the mistama mada siko adatayu. Right, it's really just what's, you know, most reasonable amount of liability that the guy was mischayef himself for. Right? Yeah. So let me just flesh out this distinction in the Ran a little further. So the Ran himself has this issue because he's worried about Shmir Bebailim. Shmir Bebailim is a rule that if the owner of the object is working with you or got something of yours, Bishas, the beginning of the Shmira, then the shomer won't be liable under Hilchos Shmira. So if Yakir was somehow involved in working for me while I acquired the object as a shomer, I wouldn't be liable to him under the rules of shomrim. By Baila V'ima, there's no chiyuv. So the Ran here is a little worried by the fact that if Yakir's driver is somehow working for me while the thing is being driven down, then it might be a Shela Bebailim problem, right? Because he's saying, if I become a shomer right away when Yakir puts it in the car with his chauffeur, and his chauffeur is working for me as he's driving it down to me, he says you should be considered to be a Shmir Bebailim, because Yakir's emissary, the chauffeur, is working for me, Bishasa Shmira. Now the Ran answers that problem by saying that insofar as the reason for liability during the journey is midin arev, not midin she'ela, the question goes away, right? Because during the journey, the reason why I'm liable is mitam arev. So there's no overlap between Yakir's worker doing an action for me and the time of Shmira, right? They're temporally disjointed, right? So it's only under the assumption that the she'ela starts once Yakir puts it in his car that you have this problem of she'ela bebailim. Once you recognize that the chiyuv is mitam arev, you don't have the issue anymore. And here's his answer: the haparishna to show el zek shehu mischayev alei b'shahaya b'rshusa eved lav midin she'el gamarhu ela midin arev hilkach laka she'ela bebailim techimat liyade havelei she'el gamar v'lav ima b'mlachta. It's only once the cow arrives in Philadelphia that I become a shomer, and then Yakir's chauffeur is no longer working for me, because my chiyuv before that was only mitam arev. The Nesivis in Simen Shin Mem runs with this idea of the Ran. And he has an interesting further observation. So here's his, he quotes the Ran, and he says, here, you see the L'chora Kasha. He quotes the Ran, and he says, you know, the Ran's a bit of a chiddush in applying the principle of Arev to this scenario. So this is the Nesivis and Simen Shin Mem. He says, "Debishloma b'tein mana l'ploni." If I say to Adam, you know, give money to Gabe, "Hotzi kol hamamon mirshuso, shal piv niskalke lamamono, ulekach nischayev lo." Right, so there's some way to hold me responsible because I'm the one who told Adam to, I guess, let's say, throw the money in the river or give it away to so and so. Masha einkein hacha shemesa habehema umalach hamaves mali hacha mali hasam v'imkein lo niskalkel hamamon al yado. He's trying to distinguish between a case where I simply give somebody direction to be miskalkel something. If I tell Yakir, throw the money in the river, so then it makes sense to hold me liable. But if I just tell Yakir to put the animal in the car with his chauffeur, it's not clear that I caused him to lose the money. I just gave him instructions that he acted on, which, you know, somehow ended up leading to the thing getting destroyed. But it's much harder to trace my instructions, trace the bad result to my instructions. So the Nesivos kind of finesses this, and he says, "Ach ze lo kasha, the hala inyan shmira vaday dinas chayiv kiven shesilek shmir al piv." He says, "What's important here is not that I explicitly tell you to do something destructive, and only then am I considered to have accepted responsibility. It's the very fact that you are misalek shmir al piv. That's what triggers the hischayvos." So it sounds like, even if I give you like a broader instructions, I say, you know, Yakir, do this, you know, so be misalik the animal from your watchful eye and hand it over to your Eved's watchful eye. That instruction itself is considered to be an acceptance of liability. Okay. And the way the Nesivos conceptualizes it, he says, Kivan sheyesh alav din shomer, chinu meil yochel eschayv atmo lahasno sheyeh alav din shoel. Kind of strange. He says it's almost like I'm committing myself to be voluntarily like a shoel in order to cover the liabilities, which I think is gets to Yakir's point earlier. It's not like automatic that Arev will bring about the liabilities of a shoel. It just sounds like it's tailored to the scenario of the case. Right, because the way the Nesivos is understanding the mechanism of Mitam Arev in this case is that it says, if I'm masnaon myself to become like a shoel for those kinds of liabilities. Okay. The Nesivos here points out, I just want to make just one last comment to the Nesivos. He says there are two nafkamina between viewing the basis of liability here as being triggered on the basis of Arev rather than on the fact that when Yakir gives it to his servant, it's as if the servant is my shliach. He says, first of all, even if the guy, the chauffeur, is not the kind of person who can be a shliach, there could be liability mitam Arev. Second of all, he says, I could always back out of the shmira before the object enters my rishus. So if the basis of liability in this case of the chauffeur is mitam Arev, so I have liability mitam Ari, but I could still back out of the more permanent shmira relationship until the object gets to Philadelphia. So that's just the Nesivos being more explicit about where you'll have nafkamina between chiyuv mitam Arev and chiyuv mitam shlichos. Okay, let me mention another. Oh, Yoni has a hand raised. Yoni,
is the question the is the Nesivos' argument that if Midin like show out, is that extendable for all Arev's cases or just this case?
I assume it's for this case. That's what I assume. I think that's what Yakir's point was also, that it needn't take on this form of Shoel in all cases. It's unique to this case because you were being hired, you're borrowing it as a Shoel. I think that would also be Miyashev, what the Ran says here with what the Ritva says in our sugya. The Ritva in our sugya seem to say that you'd only have chiyuv mitam arev in a pshia case, not in an ones case. Whereas the Ran here seems to be saying that you could have chiyuv mitam arev in an ones case. And maybe that's just because you want, in this case where you were going to become a shoel, the chiyuv arev takes on those properties of shoel also.
Oh, sure. So I'm not
that sound good, Yoni?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
It wasn't a problem of Shayla the
Bioinger
if it really didn't show well.
If what's Midin Shoel? He's saying because the Shmira doesn't start yet. The Shmira only starts once it gets into Philly, once the animal arrives in Philly. There's a
Chiyuv. Yeah, but he's Mihai himself, Midin Arev, Midin Shoel. Yeah, or as if he wasn't Shoel.
As if he was, I think. That's the crucial line. Meaning, there is no.
It only carries some of the demon, but not all of the demon.
That's right. Right. I guess, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting question. Why only some? I think because you would say you'd have like the chiyuvim, not the special, like, you know, kind of quirky pturim of Sheila B'Bailim. There's like a way of generating his chayvos. But I see what you're saying. Why wouldn't it be like fully matched to it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody started a chat here. Oh, Eitan. All right, so Eitan, should I read it out loud? Everybody can see it on my screen. All right. Okay, bye, Eitan. Oh, is that just to me? But now everybody can see because my screen. Everyone sees my screen.
No, I don't think we can see it.
Oh, you can see that?
No.
Really? That's great. All right, good. Let me get to these other cases quickly. Yeah, who has a question? Adam, go for it. Yeah.
So according to the syllabus, what exactly will be the chiluk of an arvid case, whether or not you show up? If you're not sure, what's different about it?
Right. So no, one difference is definitely shela b'bailim. Like there's no patur shmir b'bailim. The Nesivas also thinks another nafgamina is that I could still back out of the real shela, which is in the star yet. Right. So since my liability as a shoel will only begin once it enters in my rishus, I could still call it up back here and say, you know what, I don't want to do the long term relationship. I don't want to enter the shela contract. But I will have interim liability mitam arev, right? But whereas
is he interpreting that for any case of arev, there the true loss has become because of your advice. So there was an act of God that a nachayev,
right? That's what the Nesivus is puzzled by initially, right? He's saying if it's an act of God, then how should that qualify for arev, right? Like an arev should really be like when it's like first, I guess in some sense, like foreseeable that you're going to suffer a loss at my direction here. But then he ends up backtracking and saying, oh, no, it's you could have arev in a more general sense where I'm willing to take on the general liabilities of being like a shoel, right?
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Okay, so let me get to this other case. So in Simon Kuf Pei Beis, the Shulchan Aruch writes that if I appoint Yakir as a shliach to go and do something for me, he says, Omer lechavero, kach scho razu veshtatev imcha v'halach v'kna lo yuchal lachzer bo dehavik ishlucho. If I appoint Yakir to be my shliach and I give him some money to go and buy it, sorry, I don't give him money, but I tell Yakir, I say, here, go buy something for me and I'll pay you back, whatever. And Yakir acts on my instruction. I can't be mevatel the shlichos before he acts. So, you know, I tell Yakir to go do something for me and he's away, he's not in front of me. I can't say, oh, Yakir, while you were gone, I was mevatel the shlichos, and now whatever you bought is yours. Even though the Gemara says you could kind of do it in the opposite way. If Yakir is a shliach and I asked him to buy something for me, to buy a home for me, Yakir could be mevatel l'shlichos and buy the house for himself. But it doesn't go the other way. So the shliach can be chozer, the mishaleach can't. Shelo b'fnei shliach. So the Nesivus in Simen Kuf Pei Beis, if Katan Gimel, is a little puzzled by this. And he says, what's the basis for the distinction? So he says, l'chein nira kavanoso, there's a distinction. Shebein chazaras hamishaleach lechazaras hashliach. Hurak le'inyan bitla shlicha shelo b'fanav. That this distinction is only with respect to mevatel shlicha shelo b'fanav. What's the distinction? And he says that the reason why the mishaleach can't be chozer is because kiva and the hashliach hotzi mamon al piv kimo b'tein mana leploni ozrok mana liyam l'chayev mishem arev. When I tell Yakir to go and buy something for me and Yakir is acting at my direction, he thinks the reason why I can't back out is because I would be chayev mitam arev, right? Because I instructed Yakir to do this action and Yakir can't be expected to suffer the loss at my behest. So I think the right thing to say here is that I can be mevatel the shlichos, but even if I'm mevatel the shlichos, I have to make back Yakir's losses mitam arev. Here's another case that I want to discuss very briefly. The Shulchan Aruch and Simen Shin Mem Dalet Sif Aleph has a very complicated case. Shin Mem Dalet Aleph is an easy case. So we all know that a Shomer Chinam could be Masnet to be like a Shomer Sachar, and a Shomer Sachar could be Masnet to be like a Shomer Chinam. But the Shulchan Aruch says that these Tanayim have to be made before the Shmira begins. If you wanted to do a tnai after the schira started, you'd need a real ma'isa kinyan. if you want the Tanai to be Chal with just Amira before the Kinyan, before, if you want the Tanai to be Chal without a Kinyan, it has to be done before the Shemira is accepted. Okay? Does everybody see that halacha? Yeah? Okay. So, the Nesivis is a little puzzled by what's the distinction between this halacha, where it says that you need a kinyan after the Shemira starts in order to change the rules of the Hischaivus, and this case in the Mishnah Bava Kamma on Chav Zayin, sorry, in a Brisa on Chav Zayin, where I say, Kras Ksusi Shaveres Kadi Chayev Almanas Liftor Potter. If I tell Adam to rip my sweater, then he's chayiv if he does it. But if I say, rip my sweater on condition that you're not going to be chayiv, then that amira alone, that phrase is sufficient to pater Adam without a kinyan. So Nesivus kind of wants to know, why is it that in the case of the shomrim, I need a maisa kinyan after the shmira starts in order to change the liability rules of the shomer? Whereas in just a general interaction between Adam and myself, I could say krak susi and your pater. Or krak susi amanas liftor ba amira, and that's sufficient to pater him. So Nesivus in Shimnam Dalet says, the reason why v'hadimahani be'omer kral menas liftor below kinyan afilu achar shebol yadei b'torah shmira. So he says, even if I gave Adam my sweater b'torah shmira, I could still potter him without a kinyan from ripping it. But I can't say, oh Adam, now you're considered to be a shomer chinam without a kinyan. So what's the difference between those two things? So the Nesiva says, the reason why he's pater in krak susi amanas liftor is an extension of the principle of arev. Kivan dim amar lachavero krak sus shelcha v'eschayev ani lecha chayev l'shalim mitam arev. Kivan da'asa maisa v'hotzi maman al piv. Since I could always tell Adam, rip your own sweater, and if he acts on that instruction, I could become chayev mitam arev. L'fi zeh hu adin amar zrok man aliyam b'tiftar michovcha, etc. Umikol shekein kisha amar krak susi v'tifter michov hakriya, mikol shekein de pater kiven dafil mi beso chayev l'shalim kisha asa ma'isapiv mitam arev. Since I could basically create liability in myself for having Adam rip his own sweater, kol shekein I could pater Adam for ripping my sweater under the same theory of arev. Ma she'enkein hacha b'shomrim kisha'eno poter osa rak mechiyev achraya shal geneva de lo shayech b'zedin arev. So the Nesivus wants to say, mitam arev, I could generate liability and extinguish liability, but I can't fundamentally change the rules of shomrim mitam arev. There's nothing in arev that could make a shomer sachar into a shomer chinam or a shomer chinam into a shomer sachar. What it can do is indemnify against losses. So for the Nesivus, that's the distinction between the case of Kras Ksusi, where I'm basically saying I'm indemnifying you from a loss by not holding you liable, and this case where I'm trying to tamper with the default rules of Shomrim, that can't be done without a Maisa Kinyan. So I don't think there's anything really fundamentally Mechudash here, just the Nesivus is applying the principle of Chiyav Mitam Arev to explain the Ptur of Kras Ksusi Amanas Liftar. Let me make two more points here, and then we'll close. Sorry, three brief points, and then we'll close. Did anybody get a chance to see the sugya in Simin Shin Vav Sif Gimel in the Shulchan Aruch? Anybody get a chance to see that, Adam?
Nope.
Gabe, did you get a chance to see that?
Nope.
Okay. Nope. Zolt, did you get a chance to see that?
Yeah, it's pretty complicated.
Yeah, it's very complicated. Yeah, it's a good way of summarizing it. It is very complicated. But here's what's going on in a nutshell. It's based on a Mishnah in Bava Kamma. If I give you a suit to tailor and you mess up on the tailoring, so I wanted you, let's say, to have I forget what these things are called, but like you could, when you hem the bottom of suit pants, you could have a cuff or no cuff. Is that the right way to put it?
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about? Right. So let's say I tell the tailor, I say, I want no cuff, and the tailor makes a cuff. So there's a whole rule, there's a whole cheshbon about how you could recover damages from the tailor. And one of the rules is that, is the way the tailor did it with the cuffs, is that worth more or less than what it would have been worth otherwise? That's what you have to know to figure out damages, right? Is the new product worth more or less than without the new product, without the cuffs? Now the question about big machlokas in the poskim, machlokas in the sma and the shach, is when we calculate this idea of whether it's worth more or less, do we calculate that based on what the suit would have been worth had he done it correctly? Or do we calculate it based off what the suit was worth before he put in the cuffs? Right? So is it like the unhemmed suit? Or is it the value of the suit had it have been hemmed with the non-cuffs tailoring? So whatever, we don't have to get into this dispute. That's machlokes in the sma and the shach. The nesiva says that the sma is right, that we calculated based off what the suit would have been worth had the tailor done the tailoring in the right way, right? So let's say the suit right now is worth $100. The suit after the tailor does the French cuffs is worth $150. Had he done the non-French cuffs, it would have been worth $200. Had he not tailored at all, it would have been worth $140 something. So the Nesivis argues that we calculate it based off what the suit would have been worth had he done the non-French cuffs, right? So the suit would have been worth, what did I say, $200? Yeah?
Sure.
Okay. So look what he says. I mean, here, and what's his proof for that? His proof for that is that he thinks the liability here works mitam arev. He says, here's a general principle of arev. He quotes that ritva on ayin gimel and bava metzia. Ah, we got Uri. Is that Uri?
Yep.
All right, everybody say hi to Uri. Yeah, you have to hold him a little higher so we could see him. Hey. Oh. Hey.
Hi.
Hey. Is this his first year, Yaki, or he's been gone for weeks?
Yeah, I think it's his first year. He's sat in on Gabe and my learning before.
Ah, excellent. All right. Hey, Uri. It's good to see you. So the Nesivis quotes the whole sugya of Arev, and he says, by the way, because it's Arev, and he tries to prove from that sugya and Arev that you don't just cover the actual out-of-pocket losses, you cover the lost profits that the person suffered by relying on you. So in the Zulshafat sugya, where I gave you wine money to buy wine in Zulshafat, you're not just liable for the out-of-pocket losses, you're liable for the profits, he argues, that I would have made had I have purchased the wine and benefited from it like you were supposed to. So he says, by extension, since that's the underlying theory of Arev, he says, Lufiza nira b'schiras polim, da hadin de davar ha'avud shal mamon de mishalmin kishachazru, nira de mechayven l'shalim b'davar ha'avud, kol masha haya yachal l'harviach. When the poelim back out in Davar Ha'avod, where there's Chiyuv Mitam Arev, you don't just pay the actual losses, like how much you lost from the flax that got destroyed, how much was that worth? You actually pay how much the guy would have profited had he have had the harvested flax ready to sell at the market, right? So this is a really important point from the Nesivis. The measure of damages in Nezek is different from the measure of liability, the measure of damages under a theory of Arev. Under a theory of Arev, you pay kol masha hayayacha laharviach. Okay? He says, and then he says, therefore, by extension, in this case of the tailoring, l'fizeh b'hachti l'tzavo adam b'tzavo shachar, where the tailor was supposed to make the non-French cuffs, and he makes the French cuffs, or whatever, he makes the cuffs, m'chuyiv hapoel l'shalim lo masha hayayacha laharviach, kivan shahaya b'yadav esamach alav. The liability mitam Arev is based off what you would have made had the suit been tailored the right way, not based off how much it's worth absent any tailoring. So this is just the real, really important chiddush of the Nesivos, that the measure of damages for Arev is going to be higher than the measure of damages under a theory of Nezek. So let me get one more case in where I think you might also have a Chiyuv Mitam Arev. On the bottom of page 8, it's a little, it's not so explicit in the Rishonim here. You have a principle in Hilchos Dayanim in Siman Yudalid, where generally the halacha says that if we have a court dispute, I'm not chayiv to cover your costs of litigation if I lose, right? Each party covers their own costs. But the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Yudalid here says, Misha Amar L'chaveiro She'yelchu Ladun B'makom Acher. I tell Adam, I say, Adam, let's go to L.A. to litigate our dispute. V'yamar lo leich v'ani avo acharecha. I say, Adam, you go and I'll meet you there. So Adam goes, he travels. V'hasheni lo halacha acharav. And I mess him over. I don't follow him there. And now poor Adam incurred all these expenses by going to meet me there and I never showed up. So the rule is, tzarech l'shalim l'zeh shahalach kol yetziyosav. I have to cover all of Adam's costs. So this comes from a Mordechai. And the Mordechai says, oh yes, because there are kama dvarim yesh she'ein tzrichin kinyan. There are some things in halacha that don't require a kinyan. And this is one of them. And if you look in some achronim, they use this language here of kivan sha'al pi diburo hotzi zemamono. The reason why I'm liable here is because Adam suffered those expenses by relying on my direction, relying on my word. I told Adam, let's go litigate there, I'll meet you there. And he spent money to go and meet me there. So I think, as the Mordechai points out, there are some things that don't require a kinyan. That's because chiyuv mitam arev in this implicit case, in these implicit senses, doesn't require a kinyan either. I think that's another important extension or another application of this din arev. Okay, let me just make one last hara, and then we'll close up our discussion of arev. Those are the cases that I wanted to discuss of applying it. So again, the Gemara itself, the closest thing we have is the sugya in Bava Basra of explicit arev and the sugya in Kiddushin, which is somewhat implicit. Then we have the sugya of Zol Shafat and Ayin Gimel. We have the Ritva's, according to the Ritva's interpretation, we have the Ritva's extension to the case of Chazara de Balabayis and Chazara de Poel, Davar Ha'avod, he thinks is an instance of Chiyuv Mitam Arev. We have the Rashba's Tshuva, where he applies it to the case of the not recovering the loan document, where one Shutef acted on the other Shutef's instruction. We have the Ran in Bav Metzia Tzadi Ches, where you tell the Mash'il to send the animal with his chauffeur. So the Ran said that's not a Chiyuv Mitam Shlichus or Shmira, it's a Chiyuv Mitam Arev. Then we have the Nesivis is saying that sometimes when you tell a Shliach to do something, you can't be Mevatel the Shlichus because you'd be liable Mitam Arev anyway. Then we have another Nesivis in Shin Mem Dalet where he says, when I tell you to be Koreas Ksusi Amenas Liftor, the basis for the Ptur is Mitam Arev. And then we have the important Nesivis in Shin Vav, where he says that Chiyuv Mitam Arev generates the expectation damages that you'd pay how much you expected to recover by had the guy performed. You don't just pay the reliance amount. You don't just pay the out-of-pocket losses. You pay the expectation damages of how much you would have gotten had the guy performed properly. Those are the cases. And then we have this last case that I just mentioned, the case of the Hotzah Sadin, the expenses of the litigation where one person tells the other person to travel and, you know, he ends up not following him. So the party who instructed the other to travel is going to be chayiv for his losses. Those are the cases that we have explicitly in Achronim of applying this idea of Mitam Arev. Just want to point out, one important qualification that we get comes from the Ma'arik and Siman Kuf Lamed Gimel, which we started with, which we saw in the beginning of our sugya. This is the Ma'arik where he said there's not going to be liability for Davar Ha'avod, where one worker is working for free. And his argument was that there's no schiras poalim, right? There's no contract if a guy is working for free. Now, at one point in the Ma'arik, in Siman Kuf Lamed Gimel, he threw in this line. He says, there's no liability mitam contract, but then he throws in a line saying, oh, why isn't there liability mitam arev? Remember in this case, now, Reuven said, I'll work for you for free. You don't have to hire other people. Like, say, Akir is moving his books. And I say, Akir, don't hire workers. I'll schlep them. I'll schlep the books for you so long as you pay for my train ticket to New Haven. And then, Akir doesn't hire anybody. And then I back out last minute and he can't hire anybody else, even though Akir already paid for my train ticket. So the question is, shouldn't I be liable under a theory of Arev? So the Ma'arik says, V'yafo gav shehotzi ma'osav al smachti v'Reuven. Shimon hu de ifsid anafshe, de havale la sukia daita dilma hadar beruven. No, like Yakir brought the loss upon himself because he should have realized that I might have backed out. So I think this is the first time we see in Mefarshim the explicitly that the reliance has to be fully justified. So if Yakir wasn't really justified in relying on me, and here the Pisrei Choshen tried to explain that it's because the fact Yakir should have known that because I was working for free and not being paid, that creates less of a basis to rely on my promise. If you were paying me and I was like, I guess felt more obligated, then the reliance would be justified. But since, you know, I was doing this for free as a favor, Yakir wasn't really justified in relying on me. So Shimon hu de'ifsed anafshe, Yakir brought the loss upon himself. I saw Yoni has a hand. But I just wanted to point out, notice how this is a very important qualification to that formulation of the Rashba that we saw earlier. I said the Rashba's formulation is too broad because the Rashba said, here was his formulation, Kol ose maisal pi acher ose acher chayv midinarev. Marik's telling us it can't just be kol ose maisa, it's got to be that it was a justified reliance and you weren't mafsid anafshecha by relying on him. L'chatchila. Yoni, let's take your comment.
I don't understand. If the Marik does believe in a concept of a revus, even to any extension beyond like plain like hobo, then how is this case any different? This is just because the guy's working for free, he's still, you know, like every case of Ari Vito is saying,
yeah,
how about that to get adopted on the other bed?
Yeah. I think you'd have to be
any like incentive for the Ari to be doing what he's doing.
I think you'd have to determine case. Yeah, it's interesting. I guess in a lot of cases, there's like a hiyana, maybe, which, you know, explains why the arev is actually committed. So maybe that's sufficient.
You could say hiyana here, hiyana that you're relying on me to work. Like,
yeah,
I
it's interesting.
I would say that the easier reader of the market, if he doesn't agree with the concept of, he doesn't agree with the whole extension of the Rikva and the Rashba and the Ran, arev, if he just doesn't think that's true.
Yeah, meaning this idea of Havle Lasuke Adaita Dil Mahada Beruvein undermines the whole extension of Chiv Arev.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I don't know. I would think then, what's the Havamina? Why should he say V'yafal Gav Shehotzi Ma'osav Al Smach De Beruvein? That sounds like, oh, look, there is really a basis for a liability Mitam Arev here. It just doesn't apply because Yuiv Sid Anapshe. What do you guys think of Yoni's read? Yakir, you have thoughts on Yoni's read?
I just respond two things before everybody else pitches in whether they agree or disagree.
Sure.
I think either you could say it's just like the, especially like the language, he's raising a possibility and then rejecting it. Or maybe we could suggest is that he agreed that there would be a concept of Arev if it's like implicit within the Das in some ways. Like the question we had earlier in the ritual. If it's implicit Das, that there was some type of agreement that Ruben would pay back any potential losses, and that he would agree, but not, but he wouldn't. He doesn't agree to the concept of any systematic din of a rave based on just the nature of the relationship, and that doesn't bind with any of the dots that's implicit.
It's interesting. EU de ifsed and actually the havel asugi adaita de mahadare Ruben. I don't know. I think your formulation might be a little too strong for the limited grounds on which the Marik seems to deny the application of Arev to this case. I definitely see what you're getting at. Yakir, you have thoughts on this? Yakir?
Yoni, could you repeat how you're reading it?
Which way? In general or just like my suggestion at the end?
How the general way would fit with your suggestion at the end.
Okay, well, my general point is that Itamar was suggesting that the Marik believes in the concept of Revut, but it just wouldn't apply in this case because this is a reliance which isn't a fair reliance. It's too much. It's not logical.
Right.
My main general point is that this is akin to almost every other case we've been dealing with. Like every case, you could always say, but there's nothing ever incentivizing the Arev to tell him to throw away his money or to karate Tsuji or whatever, you know, or send away your sender edit with me. There's nothing ever incentivizing you to do that. That's like the definitely general claim. So instead, you could either read, I was suggesting either you could read that the Mariki is suggesting, with raising the possibility of Arebu, it's only to then reject it. He doesn't think that is a real consideration. Or potentially, I think it's something more of a stretch, but maybe the Mariki agrees there is a concept of Arebu if it jives with your internal dot, and then he has a theory that you could be behind yourself if you have an implicit dot to compensate any potential losses. But if you don't have that implicit dot, then the very nature of the relationship, that will not mechayev you for any losses. So he's saying that in this case, because like your dot, the implicit dot did not match up to this reliance, and then they did not have an implicit dot that you would pay for it, probably after Gedate, then there is no you for Rebus.
Right. So the reason the end of the day, the reason your pots are here is like what in the end of the day distinguishes this case from other cases of from all the other cases of Rebus? Just that the DAS is different.
Well, yeah. Either A, that he doesn't believe in Arebu with extension to Arebus other than pure halvaot. In general, so he just disagrees with the whole.
Where this hivus is explicit,
right? Or you only think that it works when there is some type of hivus based on that the dot there is some type of implicit or explicit dot that the Arev set thinks himself that I will compensate you for any reliance losses. But in this case, there was no such dot.
Right.
Jack, here, you agree with Yoni's reading?
Could be.
Yeah, he has to consult with Urid, you know. they have to talk about it. Anybody else have thoughts on Yoni's reading? Gabe, you have thoughts on this? Adam, you have thoughts on this?
Not without more caffeine.
You have to wait till tonight. All right, good. So that's really what I wanted to... That's it for Chiyuv Mitam Arev. Really a very interesting basis of liability here. We'll pick up after Purim with just the discussion of Kfiya and Davar HaAved, Socha Leinu Matan, and whether there could be Bidyeved liability for damages that you suffer in Chazara B'Davar HaAved. I think there'll be one more Chabura, and then we'll move on to the questions of Ones. In general, if the reasons for backing out or terminating the schiras are due to ones, who bears the liability between the Baal Bayis and the poel? All right, so everyone should have a Freilichin Purim. Guys, what do you think of having a little Purim get together via Zoom?
Ideal.
Is that crazy, or I think we should try to do that?
I think that'd be adorable.
Yeah, I
very cute, but very difficult.
You think it'd be difficult?
Difficult. Look how easy this was.
It'd be weird. I don't know.
Weird.
Why is
that weird?
Take a shot.
I like the idea. You don't like that? I think it's a great idea.
I think it's a great idea. I promote it.